Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Back on the move on the cross-border bus from Hong Kong border to the Jordan station in Kowloon, Hong Kong. And it's Sunday evening as I record this. Had a really great afternoon, family time, rest time during this really hyperactive trade show season. So I needed that afternoon a lot. I'm really just wondering how everybody I'm meeting just keeps up. There's people visiting from all around the world right now for the trade show season. And a bunch of you guys I have seen go from Global Sources Show to HKTDC to the Canton Fair. And there's meetup after meetup and night after night, and guys like Chris Davey and others are just really keeping up. And Chris is even doing a couple of Canton Fair meetups. There was one yesterday, it's released on Tuesday, on Monday, for the Phase 2 at the Macaulay's Pub in Guangzhou. And there's going to be another one, if you missed that, on Monday, May 2nd, which is next week. If you're listening to this as it's published, it's going to be at the Macaulay's Pub again, Monday, 7:30 p.m., May 2nd. So I don't think I'll be able to make it. I'm still recovering from a lot of stuff, but say hi to Chris and the others there. It's going to be an Amazon meetup and it should be a good time of networking. And now this leads me to this week's show. We have Dr. Neil O'Connor. He is a really upbeat guy and just tons of energy, really full of energy. He was on with us briefly in Mike Bellamy's interview with the transfer pricing on episode 112 before we took a bike ride together in Shenzhen, which was a lot of fun. And now we've, after a lot of coordinating discussion, we actually have him for his own show on our Global from Asia podcast. He's going to be discussing today global sourcing and China sourcing in the year 2025. So without further ado, let's get into it. So we're here in the TST office, and we just had a great Indian restaurant in the area with Dr. Neil O'Connor. It's a pleasure, and thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Mike. Great to be here.
Sure. I know you've been listening to the show for quite some time, and we've met through a few times, and we were even on episode 112 with Mike Bellamy sharing some information. So thanks for coming here. There's lots of amazing things you've done. Do you mind giving us a quick introduction of yourself for everyone?
Wow. Well, been in Hong Kong for under 20 years, 2 years in Singapore and 18 years in Hong Kong, so 20 years in the region. I've taught at 3 different universities in Hong Kong and 1 in Singapore, but I've spent a lot of time across the border speaking to suppliers, visiting the factories, and really trying to understand what is in the mind of the supplier.
Yeah. How many interviews now?
When I started in 2010, 2012, I supervised 1,000 interviews, 1,075 to be exact.
And counting, still doing them. You got the trade show season is just about to start, so you're already preparing, right?
Absolutely. Me and my team, we conducted another 300 interviews just January, just gone. So that was tons of fun.
I can only imagine. So I unfortunately couldn't make it to your AmCham speech, but you had that just a week ago, and the topic was the China 2025 initiative. Do you mind giving us a little overview of what that is?
Sure. This is an initiative that was rolled out last year by one of the China top officials, Made in China 2025. It's focusing a lot on some of the heavy industries, new energy vehicles, power equipment, shipbuilding, new materials, IT, robotics, agriculture, aviation. There's one or two others there. What is very interesting about that is some of the areas that are already impacting the world, for example, new energy vehicles. And one thing that's very interesting is BYD, one of the local Chinese vehicle manufacturers, is currently the largest new energy vehicle manufacturer in the world, not just in China. And part of this Made in China 2025 plan is to have 8 out of every 10 new energy vehicles sold in the world to be made in China. Like, this is a bold initiative for the world, not just for China. So this is just one of the 10. We don't have time to go through all of the 10, but it's very interesting when you get dig deep into this Made in China 2025. It's very, very interesting. It is different from the five-year plans that are rolled out every 5 years. This is a bold initiative to take China right through to 2049, which will be the 100th year anniversary of the Communist Party. So this is a very bold initiative, different from any five-year plan that's, that comes every 5 years.
Amazing, amazing. And BYD is, yes, I think Warren Buffett, I don't play honest, but I think Warren Buffett invested in them, if I remember. And I think it stands for Build Your Dream, or is that just some English... I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm right on those.
You're right. Warren Buffett did invest. Even before Warren Buffett invested in them, they started out as a cell phone battery manufacturer. And I, probably over 15 years ago, they went to Motorola three times to become their approved supplier. And on the third time, they got the approval. And one thing that is really strikingly about what is a catalyst for the innovation that's happening in China is when these Chinese companies become OEM suppliers to these multinational brand names. And it happened with BYD, and they haven't looked back.
Yeah, amazing. It's true. I mean, we're witnessing it firsthand. We're right in the center, and especially you with these interviews and some visits. So I'm thinking maybe your first few, or when did you start this initiative to interview all of these, and maybe how did the first few go? Is there any like beginning stories you can hear?
Well, very nervous. The beginning, 2010, I think my first trade show, 2009, I went there just to hand out business cards with the hope of going to the factory afterwards. Then I realised, oh, why don't I just do the interview at the trade show, because some of the times they weren't very busy anyway. So let's just interview them at the trade show. And that's what I did for the following 2.5 years. What is really interesting is that doing it 1,000 gave me a little bit more credibility in talking to industry and different executives. And I think what I've been doing more meaningful probably in the last 12 months is going to the factory myself, and we video the factory end-to-end and not just walk through. And so we walk through, we video everything, and we give advice to the factory owner. And so I did 15 of them in the last 3 months and having a lot of fun.
Cool, cool. Maybe we can put some pictures or something. I know audio is cool because people can be driving or you know, on their bike. We had bike before, and maybe we'll put some pictures on the notes if we can get them later. And so now you've been actually visiting, you said 15 in just the last few months, and you're going all throughout the factory. So that must have been a lot different than the first few interviews. How have maybe you noticed differences or changes in just the last few years of doing this?
Well, I've noticed changes in the last 3 months because I've gone back to some of the factories, or I've subsequently met the factory owner at the trade show 3 months later. And like, there's one smartwatch factory I visited. This is across the border in Shenzhen. And that was in November. And amazing, they were making 2,000 units a day. And today, that assembly line is gone. Okay, but you can go on Alibaba and Global Sources, and you can still buy watches from that smartwatch manufacturer. They are now outsourcing that assembly work. And this is some of the things that you see actually when you go into Shenzhen on the ground and you actually see the factories.
Pretty amazing. Do you mind expanding? Like, did they outsource in, well, for business reasons, financial reasons? Or?
Oh, partly for financial reasons. Like, everyone knows the cold winds are blowing around this area of the world. Factories are closing down. But there is a way in which factories manage things in China, and part of it is to use their network, where if you can avoid leasing an assembly line and outsource, then that may be another viable alternative if it keeps your brand name alive for the next 12, 18 months until more sales come in, more volume come in. So it's just a way of managing through hard times, the outsource option is there. Of course, this has a potential cost for quality, and sometimes the buyer doesn't know, especially those overseas that don't come and visit the factory.
We know some of them listening. I think guys got to get over here and
visit the factory.
Definitely. I know some actually have been doing their first visits this year, so coming through town and visiting finally, so it's good. So they are a brand? I mean, I don't want to keep digging on this watch one, but I'm still curious. So they're doing OEM, or they have their own brand? Or
Very interesting. They have their own brand. They're not doing OEM. And I'd like to contrast that with another smartwatch manufacturer that I visited probably 1 or 2 weeks after that. They still have their assembly line going, and it was like chalk and cheese, the two different assembly lines. Like when I visited both of them, you know, they were doing 2,000 units for that day. They were very, very busy. They had 38 people working on the assembly line, 19 on each side. And the one that had one of them had an OEM relationship with Sharp. They were making set-top boxes for Sharp previously. And you could see it in the assembly line, the documentation, all the procedures, the anti-static wristbands that all the workers were wearing that wasn't present for the first smartwatch manufacturing. It's a big difference in the quality. Another thing I want to take away is I think buyers should be aware of that it's a good thing to know that if the factory has a history of having an OEM relationship with a major multinational brand, because often it's the multinational that actually teaches the factory how to get their TQC in order.
It makes sense. I mean, I'm thinking of Apple or, these big guys, they don't have factories, but they're definitely totally on top of production and ensuring things are...
Well, we know that Apple has 700 to 800 people on the ground in China all the time. And so these are Apple employees that will go and monitor, coach, train, help any of the tier 1, 2, 3, 4 suppliers that feed into Foxconn. So we know that happens. Yep.
Interesting to learn. So this 2025, back to that, that's a Chinese like government initiative you were mentioning, and what do you align with what they think, or what do you think is going to happen in 2025 for I guess most of our listeners are overseas or Westerners, so with those people in mind, what are you thinking?
Okay, well, China's not going to go away. Like manufacturing, China's not going to go away. It's going to go through times where I guess there's two types of ecosystems in China. One is there's the copycats, and then there's the ones that are trying to make real genuine products. And sometimes it comes down to the mindset of the owner. Now, the 2025 plan is to actually identify 10 key industries that will be supported, that will be pushed, and with definite KPIs for what those industries have to achieve by 2025 in terms of either market share in China, market share in the world, and these are definite KPIs that have been set for these industries. And that's a positive thing. Like the last thing, when I talk to some executives, they think, wow, but I'm not in that area. Well, maybe you don't want to be in the other area, which is the Water 10 plan that has been set up. I don't know if I'll talk about that too much, but this is the opposite initiative where the China government is cleaning up various industry sectors that have the potential to continue to pollute or destroy the environment because they're close to those seven rivers in China. And so the Water 10 plan has clear KPIs by 2017, 18, 19, 20, depending on which industry you're in, to change the technology or to move, relocate, things like that. So that is a very totally different plan, but that plan is there too. So do you want to be in the industry that's part of the 2025 or part of the Water 10 plan? Like, there are a lot of plans in place, and depending on which industry you're in, they can have some consequences for the sustainability of your operations or who you're partnering with in China.
Interesting. So they also have stuff they're trying to get rid of as well as grow. So maybe they won't get that reputation of the bad the polluted, pollution and index and everything like that. You know, I think today we're having fun conversations, and I know you've mentioned 3D printing and other talks. So I think, you were just mentioning China factories aren't going away, but of course there's some people looking forward to the day they can maybe bring back manufacturing through just-in-time printing in their own offices, in their home countries, and on demand. And do you see that maybe certain industries are happening, or how, you know, what's the whole 3D revolution?
Very, very interesting, because I've had an opportunity to interview a startup that is in the area of software design. So they design, they make the designs for 3D printers, and they are focusing on the medical devices or the medical support industry. So a brace you may put around your ankle, around your knee, if you're as old as me, you need it around the knee. But when you and then they'll send that design across to the factory in China to be 3D printed. And so that is catching on. And I think the big challenge for 3D printing in China is the old mindset is that we make big volume and it doesn't matter if there's a 10% reject rate. But when it comes to 3D printing, it's about making every unit perfect without reject. And then more of the resources are spent on post-production, in cleaning up and polishing and making sure that that 3D printed object and the functionality of it actually works in the desired way that it's been designed for. So it's 3D printing not for your little trinkets that you put on a cupboard anymore, but 3D printing for actual use in various parts of your home or parts of your body, for example. Yeah, so that's happening now. And I think the challenge is the mindset of these factories in China thinking that we can get away with a bit of reject, but when it comes to 3D printing, it's not about the reject. It's about putting a lot of resources into the efficient post-processing of the 3D printed item.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, we've had other guests on the show that have definitely had reject rates that are in the 10% or higher range, so... then they're going to have to have to think of new ways in the future to fix that. You know, the next keyword we talk about a lot is F2C, factory to consumer. And I think actually during dinner, you and I had a little bit of a different understanding of what that means. Maybe what do you see as F2C?
F2C, I see... I got a chance to speak to about 1,500 suppliers over three events set up by Global Sources. They are doing a wonderful job across the border in having these conferences for suppliers, helping them to be better equipped to be a good supplier for the buyers of this world. And the questions that they're all asking is, how do we do O2O, B2B, B2C? How do we go on the internet? How do we develop our brand? They are so focused on trying to, for want of a better word, bypass the buyer that they have traditionally sold to, and not just make the product but actually be the final seller on Amazon. So those selling through Amazon, watch out. Increasingly, you're going to have factories selling directly on Amazon. They don't necessarily need, when they get the intelligence, they won't necessarily need the final person. But having said that, I was speaking to one factory that had an experience with selling on Amazon, and this factory was a high-end tablet manufacturer. Like, they had state-of-the-art equipment, best tablets. I would buy tablets from this factory. Okay, and so I was asking about how are you going with your e-commerce arrangement. They said, well, Amazon shut our site down. I said, oh, that's interesting. Why did Amazon do that? He said, oh, a customer complained, but we weren't very fast in responding to the customer. So maybe that's a sign for those that are working through Amazon to make sure you have your customer follow-up and service intact. But also that's a a stage where maybe a lot of factories are at in China, that they want to go through Amazon directly, but they're still learning how to do the final process of that post-sale service and looking after customers in case something goes wrong.
Definitely something to think about as Amazon sellers. And they're, you know, things, I mean, it's on both sides. So I think Amazon's also looking at the data, looking at what's selling. They're making their own brands too. So yes. You got both sides too. So yeah, you know, a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, you know, in the West, and maybe we scared them a little bit today.
It's the reality.
Yeah. So what would you advise somebody maybe jumping into Amazon now, or, you know, starting their own private label or starting their own brand? What are you thinking?
What am I thinking? I don't know everything about all the different stages of selling through Amazon, but one thing I do know is that the last mile when it comes to sourcing from China, I think, is traveling from the trade show to the factory. And a lot of buyers do not do that. It is amazing what you see when you go to the factory. So I think the biggest, and I could share with you some of the things you should look for in the factory.
Sure.
You know, and I think one thing that a lot of the factories are missing are receiving materials inspection. And as one owner said to me, making Bluetooth speakers, so they're sourced and sold through Amazon. And these are, he said, why would I want to waste money on the receiving materials inspection when I've got a $4 FOB Bluetooth speaker? It's not worth it. And I tried to explain to him, look, it affects your whole brand. It affects your whole family of products if one product is dodgy. So the bad apple spoils the whole cart. So that's one thing to look out for. And it was interesting, that factory, I went through this US Bluetooth speaker factory, and they had more than 10% reject rate. And so I was looking at their rework section, and I was asking them, oh, so what was wrong with the speaker? What was wrong? Why wasn't it working? They said, oh, number one, the volume control wasn't working. Number two, the on-off switch wasn't working. And there was something else that wasn't working. Now, all of these defects were in the motherboard or the electrical component that comes through receiving inspection. And so if they checked it at receiving inspection, then there's one less wasted hour on assembling that Bluetooth. So this is the mindset that I try to help these factory owners with, or change, to just think about how they can better set up their factory and coordinate what they need to focus on first, second, third and fourth. But when you go visit the factory, look for the receiving materials inspection. Look for the documentation of the quality, the reject rates. Are they crossing the I's and dotting the T's? Are they hell-bent on making a quality product consistently over time? And once you start to see a few factories, you'll get to see for yourself what's a good one, what's a bad one. I guess one more example is USBs is a favourite item to ship. You can get them very cheap. You can, for $500, you can get a shipment of 250 or more, depending whether it's a 4 gigabyte or 8 gigabyte. So we went to this USB manufacturer, and again, they didn't have receiving inspection either. And they said, well, why do we care about that? Because we're selling our 3 million units of USBs we sell each year to associations, to clubs, to conferences, to events. You don't have USBs to give away at your event coming up?
I'm thinking about it. I got a little bit of time.
No.
I'm thinking about the batteries, backup batteries.
Okay, well, be careful. Make sure they're good quality ones. But
you have a supplier.
I came across a really, really good one, so I can recommend to you. So don't worry about that. So with the USBs, you've got to realize that the factory is very smart, because if you receive a USB as a gift and say 1 or 2 months later it doesn't work, are you going to take it back? No, it's because you didn't buy it. It's a gift. You would just throw it away. So, but this factory is making money, and that's their business model. And so you just got to understand try and understand the mind of the owner, what is their business model. You get to know them a bit more when you visit the factory, and you can start to see for yourself, is this factory going to be around 12 months' time or not? And these are things that you get to see very, very quickly when you visit the factory. And it's so easy to go across and visit the factory. If you get all the way to Hong Kong for the trade show, just jump in a taxi. You jump in a hire car, you're paying 500 or 600 yuan for the day, and you can have a translator with you for a little bit more than that, and they'll take you around to two or three factories in one day. Look, if you really want to do it cheaply, you can ask the factory to pick you up for the airport. But if you want to do two or three very, very quickly, just hire a car. And the driver will take you there. You won't get lost. And that's what I've done. And it's only, I think, 600 yuan for the whole day. And you visit three factories.
Go out for dinners and drinks after, or lunches?
No, not. We're there to visit the factory, give advice, help these factories get their operations, their processes in order, because when the serious large buyer comes along, we want the factories to do good business. So that's what I'm passionate about.
Great. Yeah, you mentioned helping the factories. So you're doing this to help. I mean, what's your goal here with your reports and your interviews?
Okay, I guess my ultimate goal is I love learning, and I grew up on a farm, so I like playing with things that I can see. And I'm a professor, but I always have that passion for things being made, the operations, the assembly, that conveyor belt that's moving along at 20 centimeters a second.
Interesting. Getting me all excited here. So you kind of answered some of these, but I also think in your resume you mitigate risk in China. Is that similar to this topic, or is that a different kind of thing?
I think it all goes with it. Mitigating risk is about becoming more knowledgeable of the worst things that can happen, and also, of course, you want the upside to happen in your favour, but you just got to understand the downsides and the possibility. So mitigating risk is all about just having greater exposure to who you're working with. And there's only so much risk you can mitigate by just doing things online. It can help, but that on-the-ground exposure can help take your risk mitigation to one step further.
Got it. And then we mentioned earlier, Mike Bellamy, you guys have some joint projects together, China Sourcing Academy, which is, I think, a good resource for listeners enjoying today's show. Do you want to give us an overview of what it is?
Great, yes. Look, I really appreciate partnering with Mike. Mike's been a wonderful friend and mentor of mine probably the last 5 years now since I've seen him at the trade show. We often speak together at Global Sources, and we're speaking again in April coming up. We set up this China Sourcing Academy 12 months ago. We thought about it for 1 or 2 years before that, and Mike said, look, let's just pull the trigger and get something out there, because Mike saw more than me. He saw so many buyers that have been burnt by just rushing into this sourcing game. And he has seen many, many buyers. And I've started to see them now that I'm speaking at these Global Sources trade shows, and because I come up to you afterwards and ask you questions. But they ask you questions about the problems they're currently having. So Mike and I put our heads together and thought, look, we need to let's get something out there so buyers can quickly get up to speed and give them more confidence before they come to Hong Kong, before they go into China. And it's amazing what going through some of our materials can help you with. And so this China Sourcing Academy is a collection of videos. Wow, we have got over 38 videos online. I don't want to make this too much of a sales pitch, but it's all about saving time, helping buyers avoid the scams and protect their IP, okay? Like, there's many other services out there that can help you do Amazon, FBA, you know, I can tell you now all you need to know for Amazon. So Amazon, there's a lot of tutorials there, go to TerraPeak.com, subscribe to that, and they'll teach you about their competition of every little product that you type into the system among eBay and Amazon. So you know your competition. But what we're China Sourcing Academy is about is going one step further and thinking about, okay, now you need to know the supplier side, you need to know the factory side. And so the bronze, silver and gold membership, and we've got a promotion at this month up into the trade show season.
Great. So people can check that out online, ChinaSourcingAcademy.com, right? And so that, thanks again, Neil, especially right after dinner, heavy Indian food, great food. And
it was light today.
It was light, really. Wow, I got to try a heavy one with you next time then. So how can people find you and your various projects online?
Best way, ChinaSourcingAcademy.com. You can find Mike or myself, and you can email us at info@ChinaSourcingAcademy.com. And if you've got any questions, happy to field them. And also join as a free member. You can join as a free member and you get my free crash course. There's over 100 blog posts that Mike has put together. And there's a heap of other freebies for free members. So just jump in and learn something. And so you don't get burned. That's all.
Great. Yeah, I know you guys are, you and Mike are really doing great things. So thanks again for coming on, and we'll try to get back on the show soon.
Lots of fun. Michael, appreciate your service that you're providing with Global From Asia. This is wonderful. Looking forward to seeing everyone at the Global Sources Trade Show in April. And also, you've got a special event just before that.
Yeah, the Cross-Border Summit. Yeah, April 16th. So,
thank you, Michael.
All righty, that's a wrap. Man, it is freezing cold on this bus. I mean, that's one thing, if you've ever been to Hong Kong, you might notice that it seems like everywhere the air conditioning is on full blast or cranked really down low on temperature. So even though it's hot outside, you're freezing inside. There's different people with different speculations of why that might be, but it just seems to be the customs here in Hong Kong is freezing cold even in the summertime with the air conditioning. All right, and anyways, thank you, Neil, again. Pleasure to have you on the show. Fascinating talk, and even after this interview's been released, we've had a few times to get together and chit-chat, and you were just cranking away the supplier interviews. You've been all around these trade shows this past couple of weeks, meeting tons of them, and you're still just so excited and taking your students there, too. It's really great. So that's all I have this week. I just refreshed podcast iTunes reviews and nothing new for a little while. So I know there's been more listeners and more activity. So if you guys like the show and want to do a simple way to support, just take a few minutes to go to iTunes and leave an honest review. It, as far as all the podcasters say, helps us in the ranking so more people can find the show. And it's a great, easy way, hopefully, to support. So with that, I will get back to my bitter cold bus ride, and have a great week, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.